My name is Brad Dowdy, and my favorite band is Joy Division.
Are you able to answer why? If I ask the question to you, why are Joy Division your favorite band of all time? Is it possible for you to be able to give me a succinct answer to that question?
No. It's definitely not, and it's because of what Joy Division is and the things surrounding the band, most specifically Ian Curtis, the lead singer, songwriter. You know, I can't say Joy Division is my favorite band. Here's why. Joy Division's my favorite band. Listen to this song and you'll understand. It's the entirety of their music and their story, which, to be perfectly honest, is extraordinarily sad and depressing and not something I'd wish on a lot of people. But, you know, as I talk about it, if I could say Joy Division is my favorite band because they're meaningful to me, and it's not just the music or the lyrics or the story, it's all of those things combined into one. Like, it ends in, it's a tragic tale, right? It ends in sadness. And the songs are based around tragedy and personal tragedy, not like fictional stuff. I mean, this is like heart-wrenching, gut-wrenching stuff that we're dealing with. And for some reason, it resonates with me on a very, very deep level.
Yeah, I think Joy Division is mostly troubling music from a troubled individual, right? I think
right.
That's what it is. There is melancholy in everything. You know, right. I was really interested. So we're going to talk about why, but you picked a playlist rather than an album. We'll get into that in a little bit. But every single song, you know, it's a mix between catchy rock songs and crippling melancholy. But even when something is catchy and danceable, you actually listen to it, you hear what he's saying, it's always sad. Right, like Digital was a good example of that for me, where it's a really catchy and danceable song, but there's still just sad stuff going on in there.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite songs, and we'll talk about, you know, that and, you know, how I rank these songs. But it's the most approachable song, I think. Like, if you're playing a song for someone, like, my kids love that song, right? Because of the beat and the sound and the repetitive singing and the kind of crescendo of energy. But if you listen to it, you just want to, you don't understand how these guys back then and girls back then didn't stage an intervention. Like, every song is like that. Like, every song, you can see that Ian's thinking about killing himself. And it's heartbreaking when you look at it from that perspective. But I mean, I take the joy out of the songs as well. You know, I try to believe in their positive energy. I try to learn from the depression and bipolar nature of his struggles. You know, I've suffered from depression pretty much my entire adult life. It's not something I talk about very much, but I'm open about it. And I find an odd consolation in the lyrics, knowing that I'll never go as far as he did, but it doesn't mean that it doesn't scare me. And I read it and I can feel like he's written, like, if you take the sum total of his lyrics, he's basically written the definition of what depression is in so many words. And how can this, you say this thing, like, if I said this out loud to someone who didn't know this band, it would be like, well, why do you listen to this? Like, why do you want to feel sad and depressed and, you know, sympathize with someone who feels these terrible things and has clearly has mental issues? why do you find that enjoyable? And it's not that I find enjoyment, but I find peace in it. I find myself in it. It's very, Joy Division is a very personal band. Like, the style and the music and the lyrics, it like kind of gets into your bones. And, you know, sometimes you have to shut out the lyrics, even though that's not what the intent is, and listen to a song like Digital for the passion that was behind it, but also understand the trouble that Ian was in his young adult life.
When do you know if offhand when it was that Ian took his own life, and obviously Joy Division ended?
I forget the age he was at. It was like around 1979, 1980.
Did the band continue to do anything post?
So that's a big part of their story. The band became New Order immediately after his suicide. So Ian, right up to his death, Joy Division was embarking on a North American tour. They started to blow up worldwide. They were already huge. And then they started getting worldwide recognition. And on essentially the eve of their first North American tour, Ian hung himself at his home. And obviously that devastated the band. You know, they were at their highest point of success and popularity. And I mean, it obviously broke them, you know, but the remaining members turned into something pretty amazing called New Order, which I think probably a lot of people will know New Order more than Joy Division. Now, they didn't have Ian's songwriting behind them, but that didn't stop them from becoming one of the biggest bands in the world, and they're still going strong, even though not in their original lineup. I mean, their New Order is a band you still hear today, right? I mean, you're clearly familiar with New Order.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people are, so.
Do you like New Order?
I do, but I don't have the complete passion about New Order that I do with Joy Division, although there's some New Order songs that are very, like, poignant to me. Like, there's a song called Love Vigilantes, which is probably one of my favorites. But the lyrically, they've never been the same. They became more, a little bit dancier, poppier, even though they do have, you know, kind of their more subdued moments. You know, but yeah, I definitely like to listen to New Order. I don't have the passion with them that I do with some of my other favorite bands.
So why didn't you give me a Joy Division album? What you did is you gave me 10 songs in a playlist, which, you know, we'll share. It'll be in our show notes, so you can go and check out the song list if people want to. Why did you do this?
They only, during Joy Division's existence, which I guess was about 3 years, maybe 4 years, they only released two proper albums. And those two albums are not that good. It's a weird thing to say. Like, all of their most popular songs were not on either of these two albums. They were all released as singles. Like, every song on, like, my favorites list, I think, so I gave you a playlist of 10 songs, and I ranked them in order of my favorites. Out of those songs, three of them were on a proper album. Out of 10. And that's it. So while their albums are loved, I rarely listen to them straight through. I listen to Unknown Pleasures. That was their first album. I'll listen to that one straight through. And it has the song, some of the songs that I really like, and some of the songs in my top 10. I don't have any songs from their second album, Closer, on this list. But a lot of the singles seem like they should have been part of these albums. Like, Love Will Tear Us Apart is an Unknown Pleasure song, it seems like to me. Atmosphere is the perfect closer song. But none of these are on these albums. You know, they're all singles, like, all like Digital, which we've already talked about, not on an album. So their recording history was weird in that aspect, and I don't know why. And I'll, like I said, I rarely listen to one of their albums straight through. I'll just listen to like random playlists that I've made of Joy Division, or, you know, just I'll listen to some of their compilation albums because they'll have all the songs together. I'll listen to some of their live stuff because you get to hear all the songs that I want to hear. But on their two proper albums, I mean, as popular as they have become in retrospect, and as, you know, as much as people love them, they're just not what I think is completely representative of Joy Division, even though, you know, that's a little bit unfair. It's just that all the good songs ended up as singles, and it's kind of a weird thing to see that happen with a band. That would never happen these days, right?
Did you ever, were you a fan at the time?
No. I came to them probably in the late 80s. Mm-hmm. Was my Joy Division experience. I was probably, I was like 8 or 9, mm-hmm. you know, when they were in their heyday.
Sure.
Before Ian's death in 1980. So I was not listening to Joy Division when they were around. But when I got into high school, you start to, you know, discover more music from your friends and your peer group. And I discovered a band called The Smiths, which I'm sure you know, and I'm sure most everyone knows. And then you discover like this whole Manchester music sound and this whole, you know, basically religion of music that came out of that area in England at the time and before them. So, you know, by way of listening to The Smiths and then other related bands, like in the late 80s, and this is when The Smiths are just about done too. I mean, I think they were broke up by 1987 or so, something like that. And this is when I'm in high school, and that's when I found them. You know, all these bands are essentially done. So you'd go back and, well, if I like The Smiths, I should like Joy Division. And I remember at the time I listened to them, but I didn't totally get it. It didn't click with me till I was much, much older. Like, I always listened to them, but I didn't have a passion for them. I was much more into The Smiths and everything Morrissey did. Well, Morrissey's been off his rocker for at least a decade, so I barely listen to anything he does anymore. And so probably for like the last 10 or 15 years, I've just had this focus on Joy Division, and maybe it's because of some of the things I've been going through personally. You know, you can relate to like these depressive aspects of Ian's story that I ended up like doing like the deep dive on Joy Division. You know, I listened to all the music, owned all the CDs, owned all the live concerts, bootlegs, read all the books, watched all the DVDs, watched all the movies, you know, just learned all the stories. And it stuck with me to this day. Like, I can reread or re-listen or rewatch anything Joy Division anytime. So it's just a band that I came to originally after they were long gone. And still, it took me until my adulthood to go, oh, yeah, this is me. Like, this is a representation of me. And yeah, so that's definitely been like in the last 10 or 15 years that happened. Certainly not at the time they existed, or even back in like the late 80s when I was getting into the Manchester music scene.
Do you want to talk about some of the tracks?
Sure. Yeah, because it's a weird mix. And there's actually, you know, I think digital is... I'm glad you brought that up because of all the things we've already said. That's a really interesting track. And I ranked them in my personal order. I put that one at number 3. Like, that's not a song you normally hear from Joy Division. Like, if you happen to catch them on some show or radio, you're going to hear one of about, you know, maybe 3, 4, 5 songs. You're going to hear Love Will Tear Us Apart. You'll hear Transmission. You might hear Disorder, which didn't even make my list. You know, and there's a few other ones that She's Lost Control. Like, that's not in my top 10, but that's a very popular Joy Division song. It's there's a few different sounds that I latched onto. And like the number 10 song on my list is called Insight. And it's one of the weirdest songs because Bernard, who went on to front New Order, Bernard Sumner, he played guitar and keyboards. Well, they had this weird keyboard arrangement and Insight. Like, I call it the Pew Pew Laser song. Like, it's not a typical Joy Division song. It's got this really weird keyboard rocket space lasery sound to it that I just kind of latched onto. But the song's called Insight, and the song is about your dreams dying. Like, you know, I wrote down some of the lyrics to some of these songs. Like this one, I wrote down, I've lost the will to want more. I'm not afraid, not at all. I mean, it's about suicide, and which is scary in retrospect when you take these words out of the song as a whole and read them. And I listened to a lot of the interviews with Bernard Sumner and Peter Hook and Stephen Morse. They're like, yeah, we knew Ian was not in a good place, but we didn't even realize what he was saying in these songs. But every song is like this. And I don't know that they could have done anything. You know, he was physically ill. You know, he had seizure problems. He was on, you read the list of medications that he's on and all the stories and aftermath of his life. You know, like, doctors looked at his medication list and they're like, well, that would kill anyone. I mean, there's no wonder, you know, that it ended this way. And like, I always wonder what could have changed if someone intervened. But at the time, you know, Manchester's, you know, a working class town. You know, I don't know what type of resources they had. You know, all his bandmates are, you know, 20 and 21 and 22 like he is, and they're just out having fun. You know, they know Ian is different than the rest of them, but, and they couldn't even do anything, right? They just wanted to keep going, keep playing music and, you know, support Ian the way they could. But I don't think there was an awareness of like what he was really going through in his head. And let's not say that some of this wasn't self-inflicted either, right? He got married at a young age and then had an affair while he had a young daughter at home. And that plays into a lot of the conflict in his songwriting, which, you know, doesn't help his mental state either. So let's not say he's innocent in all this, you know, either. So it's kind of heavy to talk about Joy Division.
It is heavy. Mm-hmm. It is, because they are not, it is not a light band by any stretch of the imagination. Right.
Right. Right. Right. So it was hard to rank these songs because Shadow Play, I put it number 9, but it's one of the classics, I think, for them. Like, it's just got this bass line that's like tailor-made for like your brain drifting away. And, you know, the way the song starts, you know, it's like a movie soundtrack, the way the song goes. And this is one of those where, one of those songs that had a popular video of it, not like a you know, not like a stage video, like a live performance video. They did it in studio for Granada Reports, which was a TV show. So Tony Wilson was this, I don't know, bigger than life TV character, record producer. You know, I don't know if he was around when you were growing up, or what he was doing when you were growing up. He only passed like recently.
Yeah.
But he was always, you know, he was basically a public figure in Britain in the entertainment industry. And he was the guy that essentially discovered Joy Division, got him on his TV show. And Shadow Play is one of the videos that you actually see the band play live. And I actually laugh at that one because Tony Wilson is such a cheeseball. Like, you'll have to put in the link to some of these videos because he takes himself so seriously and it comes off so poorly. But his self-importance is very high. But he was a big deal at the time because he was discovering a lot of bands. He had his own record label. He founded Factory Records, you know, where bunch of bands came out of there, like the Happy Mondays. They were huge, huge for Factory. And Joy Division was a Factory band as well. So, but this song is it's just, this is one of those great background songs. This is, a lot of Joy Division songs are, headphone songs. Like, you want to get in your head with this music. Shadow plays one of those songs. Number 10, Insight. Number 9, Shadow Play. Number 8, New Dawn Fades are all from Unknown Pleasures. That's why that's the best album of the two in my book. And then none of the other songs on my list are on any album. But New Dawn Fades, a lot of people have probably heard Moby's cover of it, like in the 90s, I think, or early 2000s, where he did a cover of this song. But this is one of those self-reflective Ian songs where it's dark from front to back. Like, there's no uplifting moment. I mean, the title is called New Dawn Fades. I mean, that's telling. But, you know, when you're, I don't know how I would handle this if I was in the band situation, when you're in a studio and you're rehearsing new songs and three of you are making the music, and then your lyricist comes up and starts singing different colors, different shades over each mistakes were made. I took the blame. Directionless, so plain to see. A loaded gun won't set you free. So you say. I don't know what I would do if I was in these guys' situation, because, you know, in retrospect, I'm sitting here reading these suicide notes that Ian's writing in every song.
You can just imagine, though, especially then, people being like, oh, that's just Ian.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And that's what they all thought. Like, I mean, they knew he was extremely different, right? So they were all just, well, that's just Ian. I mean, that's what he does.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, and honestly, that's why we're successful, right? I mean, you know, they obviously went on to success on their own, but this is why they are Joy Division, right? Is because of those lyrics. They weren't writing any of the songs. They were writing the music.
Look, they were aware of it. Look at the name of their band.
Yeah. I know. Yeah, so they've had... That has been one of the weirdest things. And that's all kind of driven from Bernard. You know, at first they were Warsaw. And they had this imagery, this very, like... it's not quite as far as like Nazi type imagery, but they definitely, Bernard had this fascination that I think he kind of regrets listening to later interviews with him and reading his book. You know, some of the naming and some of the, you know, the you'll have to look up the definition of Joy Division if you're not familiar with it, but it was essentially, you know, concentration camp prostitution ring. Mm. Essentially,
I did not know that.
To that level, it's something to that degree. I don't know if I have the specifics right, because it came out of that, you know, this and New Order continued with that name. It had this very strange naming thing, but that was mostly from Bernard. That Ian didn't have much to do with that, at least as far as, you know, my learning of the band was. One of the most, all these songs that I like are all really popular, but one that a lot of people latch onto is called Dead Souls. I like this song because it's one of those never-ending intro songs. It's like the perfect vamp song when you just want to play, like the band plays it over and over, like while someone's coming onto the stage or something like that, but it's just got this great kind of beat and bass line. It's one of the first songs... Like, I can picture Ian doing his dance, too. And that was a big part of his persona. Like, this dancing that Ian would do. Are you familiar with what it looked like? Like, have you seen, like, any of the videos where he, like, really loses himself?
Yeah, and I've seen the movie.
Yeah, yeah. So, I've never seen anyone dance like that before or after. And then, that also correlated straight into some of the epileptic fits that he would have. Like, the band didn't know, is this real or is he having a fit right here on stage? Mm-hmm. Which would happen. It's creepy and scary, but it's mesmerizing at the same time, because he's gone. Like, when he is on stage, he is the only one there. You can see it in his face. Like, there is no one else in the world on that stage when he's in front of a microphone. There's no one in the audience. There's no one in the band. It's just him, like, in his head. And he just...
It's not even really dancing. It looks like involuntary movement. In a lot of cases. I tell you, the only person who it reminds me of, just in the idea of an individual who's so wrapped up in himself. Are you familiar with Future Islands?
Yeah, but I haven't seen a visual, but I'm definitely familiar with the band.
I will find something to put in the notes, just a clip, the famous clip of him. They were on a talk show. It may have been Letterman, which was where most people were kind of introduced to Future Islands. Like, it became a viral video because people were like, what is happening? Yeah, like the song Seasons, it was from March 2014. It has 2 million views on YouTube simply for the fact of, like, what is this, right? So people were really kind of taken by it. And it's for a similar kind of idea, is the guy just looks completely lost in himself. It's kind of a wonderful thing to behold, honestly. Right.
Yeah, and it is. And that's why I think once everyone got used to it with Ian, they were like, yeah, this is what he does, and this is what we expect, and it's kind of amazing. Like, this is why he is who he is. But, you know, there was also strings attached with Ian, if you will. But yeah, Dead Souls is one of those haunting songs. You know, the dead souls keep calling him. You know, that the whole song is basically, they keep calling me. You know, it's far from simplistic in meaning, but simplistic in words. The outlier of my songs, and this goes back to the Bernard conversation that we were having just a minute ago, there's a song called Leaders of Men that you probably won't find on many Joy Division lists or top 10 song lists.
Yeah.
And I still don't know why I have this on there, but it's one of the earliest songs. This is like pre-Joy Division, Joy Division. This is Warsaw. But then the single was eventually re-released as Joy Division, but it was the same band. It was just a different name. This is one of their first songs. And I think I just latched onto it because of that. It's a less meaningful song, if you will. You know, it's very much raw and punk, like the style they were trying to mimic at the time. You know, there were fans of the Buzzcocks and David Bowie. This is just more of like your straight up punk song. With a little bit of that rage and angst that you would expect from like a typical punk band in the late 70s in England. You know, this is what it would sound like. And I've just always latched on to this song. It doesn't have the depths of Ian's brain on the page necessarily. You know, it's just more straightforward angst.
Is it Ian singing this song?
Yeah. Yeah. So at the time, there's always been variance in his lyrics, in his vocal sound, and a lot of it is production. Like, a lot of the production they hated at the time, musically and vocally, even though the producer Martin Hannett was extremely famous and had a, you know, an amazing career as a producer, he manipulated a lot of the songs, and I think this one was one that was not, and it was early, you know, and he was probably, you know, 18. And, you know, I don't know that the versions that you actually hear are captured in the best way possible. So there's a lot of lyrical or vocal changes in his voice that you hear over the few years that they were around. From, you can definitely tell a lot difference from the live recordings to the studio recordings in his voice. So that was always a point of contention for the band with the production. So my number five song is the one everyone knows.
Now, this doesn't make sense to me. Yeah, this is where, like, when I'm looking at the list, it is surprising to me that Love Will Tear Us Apart sits at number five. In the same way, though, I understand why a big fan of a band doesn't absolutely adore number one favorite song, the most popular song. I'm a big Kings of Leon fan, for example, sometimes I wish that Sex on Fire would die,
right?
Because it's overplayed. I guess the good thing that you have is that, you know, your favorite band, their most known song, I think ages very well.
Yeah. Just from the lyrics alone, this would be one of the greatest poems or stories ever written. And added to the music and the timing, the scene and the personal nature of it just takes it completely off the charts. This is the song probably everyone, if everyone, anyone's heard a Joy Division song, it's probably this one.
Yeah.
And it's an amazing song.
You may not even know that you've heard a Joy Division song, and yet you've still heard this and know this.
Yeah, and you think, boy, Love Will Tear Us Apart. You know, that sounds rough. This is going to be a rough song. And you don't even know the half of it. Like, if you really read the lyrics or listen to it, I mean, this is when Ian has a wife at home, has a newborn child, and is on the road having an affair. And he's coming to grips with all this, that, you know, he's screwed up. And you can just sit there and read these lyrics and tell, like, everything that's going on with his life. You know, it's probably the most memorable song because it also had a video attached to it, like a real video, like what was played on MTV. I remember I used to die when this came on, like, MTV2 or 120 minutes. Like, I'd just be glued to my TV and I'd tape it on the VCR so I could watch it over and over again. But it's a brutal song. You know, he sings, "Why is the bedroom so cold? You've turned away on your side. Is my timing that flawed? Our respect runs so dry. Yet there's still this appeal that we've kept through our lives." I mean, like, it just rips you apart. Like, and I don't even mean that as a pun on the title, but he's like coming to grips with, I mean, he's really screwed up. You know, his life is in shambles, and that's what the time that this song came out of, that just makes it even more poignant and kind of amazing. And I think, you know, this is definitely the most popular song, and it's probably not close. You know, I don't know that there's another song that's even remotely as close.
The next one is the next biggest, I think, Transmission.
Yeah.
But it's the gulf between those two songs in popularity would be huge.
Yeah. And I'd say so. And, but I, like, as popular as Love Will Tear Us Apart is, Transmission is my description of the perfect Joy Division song. Musically, lyrically, like the pace of the song, the aggression that builds. And this is one of the most, I don't know, or least defined lyrics, like, that Ian came up with. Like, there's meaning to the song, but it's not, like, in your face like Love Will Tear Us Apart is. I mean, it's right there in the freaking title. Love's gonna tear us apart, and it's kind of my fault. But Transmission's not really that way. But, I mean, I do believe, you know, that it is about his affair with a girl named Annick Honoré. And it's about him being apart. So on one hand, he writes a song about his wife, or to his wife, that love's going to tear us apart. And on the other hand, he writes a song called Transmission when he's away from the person he's having an affair with. You know, touching from a distance is one of the most pulled from lines out of the entire Joy Division catalog, came from this song, you know. And that's, you know, certainly what the meaning behind this song is. You know, you can almost picture, like, the places he's writing these lyrics from. You know, he's in the opposite location of his wife when he writes Love Will Tear Us Apart, and he's at the opposite location of his lover when he's writing Transmission. Yeah, you know, I'm assuming, you know, it's just, that's the way his songs tend to be. And, yeah, this could easily be my number one song. Because I probably play this song more than any. but it's not my favorite Joy Division song. But it might be my most played, just because of the music and the feel of the song. But it's kind of crazy. So the third best song is Digital, which is a big outlier on this list, but I like that you mentioned it earlier. It's one of the most approachable, if you could say a Joy Division song was fun, like from a music standpoint, and like you heard it in the background of a club, like this would be one of them. But like we've already talked about it before. I mean, it's like lyrically, it's not a good mental state song, if you will. Like, I don't know, a lot of their titles don't necessarily mean anything. You know, they've talked about that in retrospect, how sometimes they just thought words sounded good. Sometimes the titles are direct, like Love Will Tear Us Apart. Sometimes they're Digital. Well, I don't know that that relates to this song at all, but it's this is one of those songs where I don't know what Ian's mental state was when he wrote it, but it turned out to be this amazing song, and that happens a lot with Joy Division. So, two more on this list, and this is the one I'm most anxious to talk about, because when we were putting together this list and I was giving you the 10 songs, number two is a song called Ceremony. And what did you find when you pulled up Ceremony to add to your playlist so you could listen to the songs that I love?
There is a version. The version that I have is from an album called Still.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's a live version.
Yeah.
Because this is one of the last songs Ian wrote right before he hung himself. And a lot of people don't consider it a Joy Division song because New Order made it famous.
Right.
But it's the bridge song from Joy Division to New Order.
Okay.
It was only recorded 3 times ever, like in a live setting, where there's only like 3 recordings of them playing this song and Ian singing it. One of them's the one on Still, which is a live version. One's from a sound check, and then one's from like a studio rehearsal. So this was the song that I think would have set them apart, like on the world stage at the time they were getting ready to head to North America. Like, this song would have been bigger than Love Will Tear Us Apart. I mean, it's essentially the song that launched New Order, and it was an Ian Curtis written song. The boys just, you know, carried it on because it ended up having kind of that musical sound that New Order had already. A little bit more of that rhythmic keyboard beats. This song ended up being covered like a million times over because it's just, you know, again, like right towards the end of Ian's life, he's writing lyrics like, watching her, these things she said, the time she's cried, too frail to wake this time. I mean, they have to know at this time that he's gone down this path and he's not coming back.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, too frail to wake this time. That one sticks with me. And like, this is one of those songs that gets you. Like, it gets into me and it's like, wow. Like, but I listen to mostly cover versions of this song because there's no real great quality original. But it still might be like one of the greatest songs he ever wrote. And I'm glad it became popular for New Order. And it became a really, really huge song for them. It's just a really, really, really great song. Number one on my list ends up there above Transmission and Love Will Tear Us Apart. Because I can't get through it without my eyes watering.
It is just affecting as affecting can be, right?
Yeah, it doesn't matter how many times I've heard Atmosphere. as soon as that song starts, you're somewhere else. It's one of the greatest songs ever produced, I think. And, you know, again, the lyrics, they're not... Ian very rarely wrote densely worded songs, but the few words he did write were highly affecting to the feel of the song. I mean, he just repeats so many times in this song, you know, don't walk away in silence, you know, don't walk away, you know, and, you know, whether that's relating to the difficulties he's having with his wife, you know, his lover, his, is it him trying to walk away from his own life with, in without saying anything or without doing anything? It's haunting. It's absolutely haunting. I mean, you put your headphones in, you know, get big headphones for this song. This isn't a car, like a song where you're in your car and you got the windows down and you're like jamming. This is a song that you sit on your couch, pop in your headphones, and turn it up as loud as you can take it, and you're gone. Like, you're no longer there. It's unreal, this song. And it's kind of different from a lot of their catalog. I mean, there's a lot of atmospheric and type songs, or atmosphere type songs, with that kind of slower pace to them. But this one's different. It's way different. And, you know, it's never going to be the most played Joy Division song, but I think it's probably the best Joy Division song as far as, you know, just listening to a song that's really going to kind of change your life. Like, that's the one for me anyway. You know, like, I had a bunch of people tweeting me when the Stranger Things series came out on Netflix. I don't know if you've seen that. But it's based in the 80s, so they have a lot of 80s music. And, you know, everyone's saying, oh, Brad, you'll love this because, you know, I know you like that music. And, like, when one of the episodes came out, had atmosphere in it, my Twitter blew up because everyone knows, you know, I'm a big Joy Division fan. And I hadn't seen it yet, and they didn't tell me anything. So I remember I was on the plane going out to the San Francisco Pin Show last year and traveling. So I loaded up. I was going to LA this year in 2017. So I loaded up all the episodes of Stranger Things and I'm just listening to it. I know atmosphere is coming at some point. And then like episode 4 kicks in and it leads with that. And I'm sitting there on the plane just bawling just because of how well it worked. You know, like the usage of it for what the song, what had happened in the show and what the song is. It was like perfect. It's like, it's a very different song. Like, it's not, it's never going to be a chart topper type of song, right? It's not, it's nothing you'll ever hear on the radio, but it's such an important song and such a meaningful song and such a different song for them. And, you know, it's hugely, hugely critically acclaimed. You know, this is probably anyone that puts together a Joy Division song list. This is probably like top 2 or 3 because it's that special of a song. Yeah. You're just never going to hear it like in a public setting, right? It's quite the song. So I suggest if you've made it all the way through this point and don't want to listen to any songs, put some headphones in and listen to Atmosphere. It's it can change your life. It's a different song. I don't say that about a lot of songs, but it's something else.
Thank you for sharing this with me, Brad.
Sure. Sure. I'm always glad to do it. You know, I'm a music fan. You know, I'm not a music historian or aficionado. You know, this is just stuff that's important to me on a personal level. And, you know, music touches us all differently. And, you know, I get a lot from bands like Joy Division, and, you know, they end up becoming like meaningful part of my life for, you know, reasons you can find similarities in and different things like that. And to someone's story, and you just kind of latch onto it, and it really means something to you. And Joy Division's that band for me.